Welcome to Church Drunk, a spirited conversation about faith, reason, and libations. And this week, a spirited conversation about faith, reason, libations, and publications. Because this week is a very special week for us on Church Drunk, the week we've been waiting for, the week that we've been tweeting about and sending out all of our, like, heads up, this is coming,
to get you
read the book, spoiler alerts,
excited.
All that kind of stuff. It is Lamb Week.
Woo! It is Lamb Week. Literally, figuratively, churchy, liturgically.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah, it works.
For us, it's a fictional lamb that we want to talk about today.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Now, before we get started, a couple things you should know about Church Drunk. We do tend to gravitate towards the heretical, blasphemical, and perhaps just straight-up foul-mouthed kind of humor.
True.
So if you're listening to this, like, I don't know, in the car with your kids or something, tell them to earmuff up because this is a mommy and daddy program.
Yeah.
And we're Catholic, so it's Holy Week. You don't have to be Catholic to listen to this and appreciate it. All are welcome here.
Yeah.
So I'm Guess, and I'm here with Dizzy. Diz, what are you drinking?
This Good Friday, I am sipping a hard-pressed, unfiltered cider from Crispin's entitled The Saint.
The Saint.
Mm-hmm.
It works.
On Holy Week. And what are you drinking?
I've got a Saint as well, Saint Florian's IPA. And
a bitter herb.
We've decided, that the bitterness of the hops in the India Pale Ale is somehow appropriate.
Guess would just like to be a little holier
because
than I am
we like
today.
To rationalize, yes. Is what we do.
Here's that.
Yeah. So it is Holy Week, mm-hmm. and we are looking forward to Easter, right? Like,
right.
That's what it's
closer
all pointing
than
towards.
Ever. Lent is technically over, as we talked about last time, true to what?
We made it through Lent. And, you know, I guess we deserve a little credit for that.
We're not celebrating with our forbidden foods yet.
Yeah, but we're going to play it all the way out until Easter.
The end is nigh.
Yes, and we've Holy Thursdayed.
Yes.
We've Maundied. And now we're Good Fridaying.
Yeah.
Poorly.
And we don't mean to be, like, too jovial on this day. We are observing that in our own ways
But it's
today.
Not called Sad Friday, all right? It's called
it's
Good
not.
Friday.
It's not, and we talked about that, too, how we don't understand that. But we're embracing the goodness of today.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, just a shout-out to you guys on the blog, you put up the Stations of the Cross playlist.
Yep,
so
yep.
If you wanted to revisit Good Friday, you could play the playlist and kind of walk through the stations.
The Way of the Cross.
Via Cruz.
The musical.
Oh my.
So we are taking a look at Lamb. Again, if you guys have not read it yet and you would like to not have it spoiled entirely for you, press pause, go read it. We'll still be here when you come back because the internet is forever.
Yes, and if you're on the fence, maybe we'll encourage you to pick it up or give it a listen on audiobook.
Yeah.
So what is this lamb? Tell me about it.
So the basic gist of the book is that Christopher Moore, who wrote it,
mm-hmm.
Is kind of accounting for those lost years
right.
of Jesus, right? So in the Gospels, we've got the infancy narrative from Luke, and then you have, like, this one story of Jesus in the
mm-hmm.
temple when he gets lost and Mary and Joseph are freaking out. But you have nothing then until he's, 30 years old and ready to start his ministry in full force. And then you only get 3 years.
Yeah. And those hidden years, I'm kind of surprised that there's not more creative things about that in the world.
Yeah.
Or maybe we just don't know of them as well.
Know.
But this is one of our favorite takes on it.
Yeah. So the book follows Jesus from the perspective of Biff, his very best friend in the world. They meet when they're kids,
mm-hmm.
And then they go on these adventures together, and they go to find the wise men that were there at the birth of Jesus, right?
Right.
They traveled from afar.
Because Jesus knows he has this
following yonder
he's got this
star,
mission,
et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
And he's trying to find out why.
So Jesus, who they call Josh in the book, right? Because of the whole Joshua, Yeshua, all that connection.
Yeah, so characters. We have Jesus, as we know him, which is just the Greek translation, I suppose, of Yeshua, which is the Aramaic Yahashua. So we have Joshua,
Josh.
And he's called Josh in Lamb, so an accessible character.
Yep.
And as Guest said, his BFF, Biff, whose real name is like Levi.
Yeah.
They're good little Jewish guys.
Levi, who is called Biff. Yeah.
Yeah, Levi called Biff, which kind of sums up his character. You know, he's sort of that best friend to the good guy who gets him in trouble, but also kind of takes care of him. Like, he's a loyal friend.
Yeah.
So we got Josh, we have Biff, and then the kind of the rounding out the trio, although she's not there all the time.
Yeah, she doesn't follow them everywhere.
Is a very loose interpretation of Mary Magdalene from the Gospels.
Very loose. That's the description you're going with. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Yeah, well, very loose.
She's not loose like that. And then they call her Maggie. So Christopher Moore calls her Maggie. So we have Josh and Biff and Maggie. Josh and Biff, Maggie. We did want to give credit to the Magdalene, as she is known, as an inspiration throughout the Gospels. Nowhere does it say in Scripture that she was a whore or a slattern or any other, you know, bad word. She was, Jesus had female disciples and followers, and she might have even been a woman of means.
There is this ethos around Mary Magdalene where somewhere along the line she got turned into a prostitute and a repentant one.
Well, it gets combined with another story that doesn't specify her, right? Where there's this repentant woman, but it's probably not her. Yeah. She gets her own name in the Gospels. That's kind of unusual for a woman.
So what we get in the book is this character who is just kind of beautifully developed as someone who has this lovely counterpoint to Jesus, right? Like she has this natural draw that brings people in.
She's got the wise woman vibe.
Right. Yeah. And she doesn't have any of the backstory that we've kind of come to associate with her.
No, she's just their friend in the book. And she's, you know, Biff has a love for her in a way. And so does Josh. And there's kind of that aspect. But overall, mostly they are their friends.
Yes.
And then she's really close to them and to the whole story.
And so we will honor her with the highest church drunk honor that we have to bestow.
That we can bestow.
A cocktail recipe.
Hey. So once again, this is from our book, Drinking with the Saints. And it's called the Madeline Cocktail, which a little etymology. Digging has revealed is just a British
Madeline,
dropping of the G, Maudlin, I guess.
Magdalene.
Yeah.
It's for
Mary Magdalene.
It's complicated. It's part of my life, but it's complicated.
Oh my gosh. True. Okay, so to make your own Madeline cocktail, which would be really appropriate on Easter, because once again, the women were the first people to get to the tomb.
Yes.
So the apostles were hiding. Little boys, and
in fact,
the
I
women
thinking,
got there first.
As I was reflecting on the Stations of the Cross, doing the whole thing for the blog, I was like, damn, like, the men are hiding. Like, Simon gets pulled out of the crowd, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, Mary, Veronica, the women of Jerusalem, these are the people who, like, play a major role in that way of the cross story. Yeah. So,
Mary Magdalene gets a shout out as the apostle to the apostles. So we shall also honor her that way.
Totally.
So, get your cocktail glass ready. Church drunk listeners, you would like 1 ounce of cognac, 3/4 ounces of Drambuie, and 3/4 ounces of dry vermouth. I would just round that up.
Yeah, one to one.
That sounds
my favorite
easy, right?
Ratio.
Cognac, Drambuie, and dry vermouth. And you pour all of those into a shaker, fill it with ice, shake it 40 times. Lent is over.
Shake it 40.
And strain it into a cocktail glass. Give a little clink with your other holy friends and give a toast to the Magdalene.
Yeah. Shout out to Maggie.
Yes. So Josh, Biff, Maggie, and then Mary of Nazareth, the mother, and Joseph, and all those other characters are kind of around in the background. The apostles, we're going to talk about some of them later. There's some creative license taken all the way throughout. And we'll talk about some of those guys as we continue.
And it's one of the fun things about the book is that it's this great mix of you know, things that are really rooted in Scripture. Obviously, Chris Moore did a lot of research and, you know, dug into the real story of Jesus.
Yeah, he makes a big effort to treat it with respect.
Yeah. And he also had a lot of fun with it, right?
Totally.
Like, there's a lot of
this
creative
license,
to say the least.
This is a laugh-out-loud book.
Yeah. It's
honestly
funny. It's interesting. It's thinky.
Yeah. It's not going to send you to hell. Don't be afraid of it.
Right.
Go read it.
It's all the things we love.
All right.
We're going to start off our exploration of Lamb with a little game called Name That Quote. But really, it's not Name That Quote. It's like Name That Quote-er.
Yeah, Name That Quote-er. So you're going to read a quote, and I will try to guess, and then I'll take a turn.
Yeah, we've each picked out some select quotes, and we're going to read them, and you have to tell me who you think actually
said second guesses. Okay. I mean, are we keeping score? Ooh.
Oh, man, I don't know.
Like, that's probably too much work for us.
Keep score at home. Sure, yeah, we can do that, right? We can totally do that. Let me see. I don't even know which one I want to start with. I'm going to just turn to one randomly here.
Oh, my gosh. There's a lot of pressure on this.
Let's see. This quote comes from a particular character who you can probably pick this one out. I got faith in you.
Okay. I'm gonna try.
The quote is, "Ooh, you see that? He popped him with a chair. That's right. You go, girl. She nasty." Who said that in Lamb by Christopher Moore?
Oh my gosh, that's so scary.
Popped him with a chair. That's right, she nasty.
I don't actually know, but I think
it's one of your favorite characters from the book.
It's got to be Raziel.
It's definitely Raziel.
Okay,
yeah.
So
yeah.
Raziel is one of my favorites, and I kind of thought it might be him because of that language. Raziel is an angel who gets assigned dirt duty, which means earth duty, to come and give this message to Joshua about his mission. But he gets a little distracted and starts watching soap operas in real modern times and picks up some Jerry Springer language. So Raziel, watching Jerry Springer, that's what that is. All right,
what you got?
That's a good one. I wasn't expecting my favorite.
I know. It just happened. Okay. It was magic.
I'm going to give you kind of an easy one, I think. I think it's an easy one.
Okay, okay. Softball here.
Yes, and it's also kind of funny. So, nope. Sheep, goats, and pretty much any animal is an abomination. But with a woman, it's something different. Who said that?
That's got to be Josh talking to Biff, right?
Yes, it's Josh clearing things up for his good buddy Biff.
Biff doesn't really understand the way that the
Biff's sex education
rules apply.
Yeah, he doesn't know that not everything's an abomination.
Yeah.
Which would have helped him when he was supposed to be watching his buddy who spent special time with his favorite sheep.
Right, yeah. Well, and, you know, like, Biff is kind of the character that lives out all of the things that Josh is forbidden from doing by nature of his messianic calling. So
he's the lust whipping boy.
The lust whipping boy, yeah.
You know, like, the kid had to suffer for, like, the prince who couldn't get beat.
Right.
Biff. Yeah. Biff suffers the lusties for Josh.
I don't know that Biff would describe it as suffering, but...
Well, he's confused at the start. He definitely embraces it later on.
Yeah. Oh, there are lots of interesting conversations between Josh and Biff.
About we're one-to-one, although I had a little help.
Okay.
You have another one for me?
Yes.
Okay.
let me clear my throat before giving you this particular quote.
Mm-hmm.
Name that character who said, "I'm trying to learn to lick my own balls."
Gosh.
I'm trying to learn to lick my own balls.
Is it Bartholomew?
It is Bartholomew. Nice work.
I knew it would be, you know, Bartholomew. He's one of the apostles, Christians, but in Lamb, the Gospel According to Biff,
he's the village idiot.
He's really even trying. He's putting a lot of effort, I feel, into being the village idiot.
Yes.
So that is something a village idiot would do.
Yeah.
I mean, you got a lot of time on your hands.
Right. And he lives with the dogs, so he's just trying to do as the dogs do.
Yeah, that's true. He's got a lot of role models.
He's inventing sarcasm. Hmm. He's a key character, in my opinion.
All right. Bart. Here's another softball that I picked just for this character's name. That's your hint.
All right.
Today's lesson is, if someone puts poison in your tea, don't drink it.
Oh, is that Joy?
It is Joy.
Yes.
And it would be unfair to make you memorize her whole name because it's too long, and in the book she's just called Joy.
I know that Joy is short for joyous orgasm, but give me the
full... Oh my gosh, she totally gets that point. Wow, I did not... Okay, so she is tiny feet of the divine dance of the joyous orgasm. And she's a concubine of one of the wise men. We're going to hear about her later. I just wanted to get her in there somewhere.
Best name ever. Okay, this one's going to be tough. Wait, no. I'm going to save that one. I'm going to go to an easier one.
The pressure builds.
Okay, come on now. Let's see. Where was that one? I don't even know. I have to go to a different one. Okay. Wow. Okay.
I got one ready if you want to keep looking.
No. He said, who said this? You know, the girls were cooking bacon today, and that made me think of home. Who was that?
Oh.
Who was that?
Well, it's not going to be one of the Jewish guys.
Cooking bacon today,
and that made me think of home. Is it Catch?
No.
The demon Catch?
You were wrong. It was one of the Jewish guys.
It was. It was a Biff.
Because remember, Josh gets so convinced that Jews should be allowed to eat bacon, that it will bring them joy, and it will make breakfast more interesting.
And I was thinking about it because there's this one part for the Seder meal where Biff is out looking for a ham because he thinks it'll go really well with the herbs and the matzo.
Right.
So I should have went with my guts. I just... Yeah. All right, well,
so
darn
Josh,
it. Now
Josh
guess
continues.
Is ahead. One
he
point
says,
ahead.
God doesn't care if we eat bacon. I can just feel it. And Biff says, really? Does he feel the same way about fornication? Yep. Masturbation? Yep. Killing, stealing, false witness? Yep. Like,
so funny.
Just the bacon changes.
Just the bacon.
Yep.
All right, well, how about a less funny one, but kind of a nice one.
Okay.
You think too much. Thinking will bring you nothing but suffering. Be simple.
It's got to be one of the wise men. Mm-mm. What? Oh,
here, I'm going to help you. This is one of your favorites.
One of my favorites? But it's not Balthazar?
Nope.
Oh.
I stumped him, team. He actually came up in this game already, which is kind of funny.
Is it Bart?
It's Bart.
Oh.
It's Bart starting to show a little glimmer of him not being just a ball-licking dog.
Yeah. You think too much. Yeah. No,
so sometimes wisdom comes from the simpletons.
I went straight to Gaspar.
Like, I had to even the score.
Yeah.
That was my harder punch.
Okay.
Okay. I think you have one more for me.
I've got two.
I got two more, too.
Okay. This one. From one of your favorite scenes that you posted about already.
Oh, okay.
I thought he would smell more like a cat. Who said that?
Oh, that's so tough.
Who said, like, I thought he would smell more like a cat? No.
Okay.
No, you were on the right track.
I just guessed one of the disciples.
Thomas.
It's Thomas. Oh, I should have. He is one of my buds.
I thought he would smell more like a cat.
Was it Thomas 1 or Thomas 2?
I'm guessing Thomas 1. Does Thomas 2 even speak?
No, I'm just being silly. Yeah. So Thomas, one of the apostles, Thomas, the word means twin, and Christopher Moore plays on this where Thomas has his invisible friend who's Thomas too. So Thomas thinks he's a twin.
Mm-hmm. So Thomas thought that Lazarus would smell more like a cat when he came out of the tomb. Why? I don't know.
Fine.
It's Thomas.
Look at
it's
this. Thomas. It getting a little cutthroat.
Okay.
All right. Maggie, quit being a mad woman. My plan just went to hell, and I could use some critical thinking.
That's gotta be Biff, right?
It is Biff. Yeah. Biff and Maggie are a good 1-2 punch team at the end.
They're lovely.
I just wanted to give her a shout out.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
All right.
Well, who said of the Great Wall of China, I think it's ostentatious and unpleasant. I think that the Great Wall of China is ostentatious
and
unpleasant.
Is it? Okay, we already did Raziel, so it's not him.
Yeah.
Is it Balthazar?
It is not Balthazar.
Oh,
it was my last one, so I had no choice but to go back to Biff. It was Biff.
Oh, it was Biff. I should have picked him.
They were walking along the Great Wall of China for so long that he decided that it was too much.
Biff
it's ostentatious.
Gets real tired on his 15-plus years going around the world with Josh. My last one is kind of a more heart one to lead us into the next segment, okay?
Okay.
So they don't need to understand it. They only need to believe it, and they do. They imagine the kingdom as they need it to be. Imagination, not intellect. Who's dropping this wisdom?
That's a lot of wisdom. They imagine the kingdom as they need it to be. Josh? It's got to be Josh?
No, it's not Josh. It's Maggie explaining to Josh why the disciples are such fucking idiots.
Yeah.
Because he is really, this is where he's trying to explain the kingdom. And and they're like,
and they don't get
is it a monkey eating a mustard
one
seed?
One of my favorite
and
scenes.
And Josh is like, I'm going to hurt them. They have become like stupid children.
Idiots.
And Maggie's like, listen, sometimes this is how it is.
I have used that
I
so
love
many times
that quote.
In like trying to explain to people like how frustrating Jesus's life must have been to be like, can you imagine like trying to be like, because he has this whole string of metaphors, you know, it's like a mustard seed.
You
it's
can
like
tell he
pearl.
Is just
it's
trying
like
a, to pull things out.
Just like, guys, come on. And they're like, I got it. I don't got it.
Nope. Yeah. I had it for a minute.
Yeah.
So I just like that
brilliant
one.
Scene. Yeah.
Because also it's a little chide
I
to us.
How
imagination,
Maggie
not
was
intellect.
In that
because
scene,
we are kind of tempted to the intellect sometimes, which is why a good journey down the Lamb imagination tunnel is good for your soul.
Yes.
Okay.
It's like a playground for your spirit. Having concluded, name that quote.
We're going to do quick favorites.
Yeah. I don't even know who won. There is no winner. We all win.
I think it was pretty close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So rapid fire favorites. As far as like, what's your favorite blank? And then you got to let me know
so,
what it is. So I think we're going to start with, who was your favorite? Of the three wise men that Josh and Biff went to go visit, who was your favorite?
Okay. And they're represented as Balthazar, Gaspar, and Melchior.
Right.
Okay. So that's kind of from... Yeah, from the Gospels. So my favorite is Gaspar, who hosts Josh and Biff like up in the Himalayas with these like kung fu monks, and Gaspar just looks really old and like haggard.
Yeah,
and this is when Biff really starts to suffer, and Josh really starts to like take off.
Shave the yak.
He's gonna leave us behind. Yeah, Biff gets assigned this like horrific job of shave. Biff is all of us. Biff is me in Lent, where he is miserable.
Yeah.
He is hungry. He is cold. He doesn't understand it. It is just too much for poor Biff. And then he gets assigned to shave the yak, which is painful for him.
Yeah.
Literally, he gets injured shaving the yak.
Yeah.
But I love Gaspar the best because Josh disappears, like he reaches enlightenment, and Gaspar brings him back for all of us with this like beautiful little talk about not like being a bodhisattva means being present and loving others as you love yourself, and it kind of explains the golden rule in this beautiful way.
Yeah, and I do think that that is probably one of the moments in the book that is most like thought-provoking from a theological perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, that to have God among us in our midst, and to have the ability to completely detach from reality if He wants to. And yet being called back to be part of this world for us, like that's kind of a huge deal. And it frames it up in a way that I think there's like a lot of real meat there
and
to like
the
think
book,
about.
It's
and
the
to
beginning
play with.
Foreshadowing of like heartbreak ahead.
Right.
Because you know.
You're not allowed to just like walk away from suffering.
How about you, though? Who's your favorite wise guy?
So it's interesting because I think that Balthazar is my favorite. The first stop along the way. I think
that's a
fun stop. He's my favorite wise man, like my favorite character of the three wise men.
Okay.
But I do think that actually, as I've been thinking about it more, like probably the stop at the monastery and like the Yeti and the whole nine yards, like is my favorite stop. But Balthazar's just such a fascinating character to me.
He's really fun. Do you like about him?
Well, I mean, I think that like
all the concubines, is trying not to say it. I'm gonna say it for
Joyous Orgasm and Peapods and all of my favorite ladies. But like the setting, you know, like his cave that's been like carved out of the mountainside and stuff like that. But I think the relationship between Josh and Balthazar in terms of like Josh arriving at this first spot, wanting to learn everything,
it's a
and
mentor,
everything,
teacher,
and just like diving in head over heels and having people warn him, like, hey, maybe you shouldn't be spending so much time with Balthazar. Like, things are getting a little creepy.
Like, just because he showed up when you were born and brought you gifts doesn't make him the best guy.
And then you start to learn more about Balthazar and his like quest for immortality and all this stuff. And so he's an interesting character to me, and the whole like the way that Josh just dives head first his teachings and stuff is that's a part that I really enjoyed reading, and
it's a fun little
a character
detour
that
of the story.
Yeah.
Okay. So we did that one. What is your favorite funny scene? We've already talked about some of these, but what got a favorite funny?
Favorite funny scene for me, the part that made me laugh out loud, like the hardest, I think the first time I read it was Blessed Are the Dumb Fucks. Like when they're trying to sort out the Beatitudes.
So good.
And be like, all right, so here's the list of people
This is Josh
blessed.
And Biff, and Biff is like trying to record Josh's like words and ministry to like disperse it.
Right, and this is
what he gets to work with.
Josh is like, okay, so blessed are the poor and this and that, and then he goes, well, blessed are the dumb fucks, and Biff's like, we can't say that, like we're not allowed to bless the dumb fucks. And Josh is like, no, but they're blessed. Like,
yes,
there's just kind of just this back and forth, but the idea of
everybody's
allowed,
damn it,
even the dumb fucks, like to think about the Messiah blessing the dumb fucks, and you know the Messiah does bless the dumb
and
fucks.
That is our challenge, to accept that in life,
following those footsteps.
It's pretty funny. So whatever, you just say blessed are the dumb
blessed
fucks.
Are the dumb fucks.
That should be a good
it's
little...
like a mantra.
Oh my gosh, I'm gonna start using that
blessed
in my head.
Make a t-shirt
in my head. Okay.
All right. And you, funniest scene?
Well, you already alluded to him, but Raziel, who is like this blonde,
so funny,
just dopey, but mission oriented angel.
Yes.
So Raziel gets to Earth in the modern day and is like holed up in a hotel, just watching copious amounts of television and becoming sort of polluted by them.
Yeah.
But there's a wonderful little quote from Biff referring to Raziel, because he really just wants to like be in the soap operas and he wants to live out all these TV dreams. But Raziel's been not here a week and he would trade the sword of God to be a web slinger. He wants to be Spider-Man.
He wants to be Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's Raziel, Spider-Man, Angel. I mean, he's just real good at lightening of the story.
Yeah.
So I love
he does. He kind of serves as like
I almost
relief.
Always laugh whenever Raziel's there. He wants to avenge like the soap stars.
Yeah.
It's not
a story that needs comic relief, and yet he serves as that.
But
like
it
he
does.
Breaks it up. Yeah.
He wants to ask the Lord to make him Spider-Man.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. All right. Last one of the favorites.
Your favorite, you know, real gospel story.
Right.
So how it's shown in Lamb in a
rooted
creative
in scripture,
way. Yeah.
But that brought actually, to life in a new way.
Right.
And for me, my favorite one would be when John the Baptist dies.
Oh,
so
yes.
So John the Baptist plays not a major role, but a side role in the book. You get a little bit more insight into John the Baptist
and his
relationship
with Jesus.
And he's
there where he would be in the Gospels. He's at the
Jesus.
Start, and it's before Jesus even wants to launch his ministry. He's just like, no, John, like, pause,
right.
please.
Yeah. And John the Baptist gets so relieved when he finds out, like, that Josh is going to be the Messiah. And he's like, oh, thank God. I didn't want that responsibility.
So they're like little kids and their cousins.
Yeah. And John the Baptist is doing his thing. He's, like, baptizing all of Jesus' brothers in the stream and stuff like that. And, you know, like, there's this whole kind of relationship, this back and forth. But you get the idea that, you know, like, it's someone that he cares about.
Yeah.
And when John the Baptist dies, there's this very real moment that Jesus has with his friends where Jesus is just, even the Son of God doesn't have, like, the emotional hardware to deal
with. He loses it.
Loss.
He has to learn to grieve like all of us do.
And so he just gets tanked. Like, he gets wasted, and his friends have to, like, look out for him and make sure that he gets, you know, like, finds a safe place for the night and stuff, because Jesus is drunk off his ass.
It's a nice fleshing out of this idea. We're like, Jesus has felt everything that you feel. Yeah, yes. Jesus felt a hangover, and he was really sad when his friend died.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's, like, it was one of those moments that says, you know, like, okay, so the Son of God has to know the full spectrum of human experience. It's not all, you know, sunshine and rainbows and unicorn farts. It's, like, actual real life, and he had to live it. And when somebody died that he cared about, it hurt, and he had to deal with that, as I would, by probably just digging a giant well of booziness.
Well, and I'll be there to boozy along with you, take an aspirin in the morning.
So that's my favorite kind of interpretation of a gospel story.
I wrote about one of my favorite ones, which was Lazarus, but another favorite that I have is just the gathering of the apostles. So, you know, Biff is not a gospel character in our modern gospels, so he's not really part of that. So the real ones are there, and they're like Thomas, who thinks he's a twin with his imaginary friend. There's Bartholomew, who's got this simple life that he's trying to lead. There's Peter, who's really like a Mark's gospel Peter. He just doesn't get it, but he's there and he's trying. And so Jesus gathers all of them together, and it's like, here's the motley crew. Yeah. And I kind of like to imagine them as different ways because we don't know a lot about them.
Yeah. And I think that, like, putting dialogue in there, you know, like, to just kind of make those disciples more real is one of the gifts that Chris Moore has as, like, an author.
Yeah, so we've got the Fisherman brothers, and we've got, you know, his Josh's brother, James.
James.
Hanging out with the crew.
So it's a fun
there's some of
dynamic.
The real stories throughout as well.
So there's like the gathering of them, and then the way that they all like very real interventions for them to try and stop Josh from doing things that they consider to be like really bad ideas.
Well, and that's another one actually, is that Mary says, Mary of Nazareth, Jesus' mom's like, I tried to pull him back. I sent his brothers down and he would not come home, and now this is your problem, team. Like, totally. Biff, you better handle this.
So it all leads us, actually, that's a great segue into why would we be talking about this book during Holy Week where, like,
you know, on our Faith and Reason podcast.
And I tweeted out a couple quotes earlier this week on Sunday about, like, how Mary and the apostles were all kind of, like, rallying around trying to keep Jesus from doing...
Because they love him.
The crazy
this
stuff that he was going to do.
This is the person you love. You don't want to ever see them suffer.
And he was like, go find me a donkey. And they all sort of, like, two by two went out, like,
where's
to be like, we're going to go find it. And then they're like, they haven't come back yet. Let's go find them. So they're basically, like, sandbagging it, like, trying to find a way to keep Jesus from going through this whole process. But, you know, it's going to happen anyway.
He's got to go through it.
And in getting to know Biff and getting to know Josh and getting to know Maggie, like, you start to understand how difficult it would have been for the side characters to watch Jesus die, right?
Yeah, in preparation for doing this episode, we talked about kind of those gut punch moments, because Lamb is such a lighthearted book, and there's all these hilarious, like, really laugh out loud things that we're not even doing justice to.
But you know
but
how it's
going
to end.
But then there's this, there's these sucker punchy moments where you've become a traveler with them and these characters. Right. And speaking of that, the line that opens the book is Biff saying, you think you know how the story is going to end, but you don't. Trust me, I was there. So it brings you into the story and Holy Week, right? Yeah. We're entering, we're on Good Freaking Friday, where it's the worst.
Yep.
And the telling of Good Friday in Lamb, it's actually one of the better for me, like, imaginations of it, like, comparing it to movies or anything else. It makes you feel like you're there, and you hate it. It's so freaking painful.
Yes. And there's not a lot of blood and guts. There's not a lot of, like...
But there's the agony of watching people you love
suffer. Watching someone
you
care about. Yeah. And that's it. Like, the whole... Like, if you're going to know Jesus, you have to know the resurrection. And if you're really going to know the resurrection, you have to know Good Friday.
Yep.
And in order to really care about Good Friday, you have to think about Jesus as more than just, like, a religious abstraction.
So it kind of zooms in onto Biff and Maggie.
Yeah.
Who are desperately trying to save him.
Yeah.
They cannot be complicit.
Yeah.
They just can't. They can't make themselves. And Josh is kind of detached, and they're like scheming. They've got this whole thing where it's going to be okay in their minds.
Yep.
And there's this moment where the soldier's like, well, this is how you check if they're dead, and like shoves the spear into Josh, and Biff loses his shit. And I'm like, that is like, I can just empathize with that so much.
Yeah. So it's a book that I think makes the whole journey of Jesus to the cross more real. And that's why I think it's appropriate to talk about it on Good Friday, during Holy Week.
Like, what I should be thinking about today is like how horrific that would be.
Yeah. To like watch as a friend and as to watch someone that you care about. And, you know, like we all say like, I love Jesus. We care about Jesus. But like, how often do we live our lives as if he is a constant companion by our side?
Yeah.
The book, I think, helps with that because you think about Jesus in a new way.
Right. And, you know, just to circle back, I will always be talking about Ignatian imagination. Like, you should put yourself in those scenes.
Absolutely.
What would it have been like for you?
Yeah.
And this is as good a telling of any as any for me.
Totally.
So Biff does also indulge in one of our other favorite things, which is rage.
Oh, yeah. He's a full rageousness kind
so
of guy.
Biff is not pleased by this. And he doesn't. He kind of... is a warning to us, too, because Biff misses the resurrection.
He does,
You
want
to say anything about that?
I mean, he cuts himself off from the story, right? Like, he is trying to figure out, after he is brought back to tell his story and write it all down, what happened. Because there's not the ending to the story for him.
Right.
Like, he freaks out and he, you know, kind of...
shoves Judas off a cliff.
Kills Judas instead of him committing suicide, in the, like we hear in the Gospels. And then Biff's the one.
Follows him right over.
Yeah, like, he can't handle it. He doesn't...
Yeah.
Talk about not having the emotional hardware to deal with loss. Well, that's Biff in the end of the story.
Right.
And it should be us on a certain level. You know, like, Good Friday should be catastrophic. But we have the benefit of 2,000 years of knowing the end of the story.
We know how it's it goes. But, you know, this is a good way to, like, put you in. We've talked about, what do you do on Holy Saturday? Like, was he in the tomb? Was he not? I guess this is the waiting time of just being like, man, I hope it still ends like it's supposed to.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I think there's, in connecting with a real moment of desperation, you start to learn the new power of hope. And I think right now
we sure need it.
We're in a world that needs a lot of hope.
Yeah, I think there's a global Good Friday, unfortunately, happening, and you know we're real privileged not to be
kind of on pins and needles right now, trying
that,
to figure out what's going to happen with you know so many of these situations around the world that are just getting worse and worse and worse.
And that's the only hope of Christianity, right? That's the whole point.
Paschal mystery gives us hope.
Is a new life after something
there's
horrific.
There's going to be an empty tomb.
So
and
we're looking forward to that.
We stick around and see the end of the story.
Well, if we don't, I hope the angel Raziel brings us back.
Exactly.
Right down.
I don't mind getting locked in a hotel room with Raziel. All right. So
all
cheers to Lamb. Cheers to the end of the story.
We would love to hear from you. If you have read Lamb and liked it, if you think anything about anything we've said, let us know. You can email us at churchdrunk@gmail.com or tweet at us. Guess is a good tweeter now. ChurchDrunkPod is our handle.
Yeah, at ChurchDrunkPod. Sign up, follow us, and especially because we're going to be doing one more of these.
We'll have an Easter.
For an Easter podcast. We don't want to finish on Good Friday.
My mouth will be full of avocado.
Yeah, I'll just be
guests will
squeezing
no longer
lemons
have scurvy
into my mouth. And we'll do that one, and then we'll probably take a little bit of a break
and try to update some of our tech stuff. But we'll be coming back. So
sign up to follow us on SoundCloud or on Twitter or email us.
We'll put a little email link up on the blog.
Want to be kind of part of the crowd that's going to get into the next season whenever
Come on,
that
Church
comes
Drunks.
Around. Then let us know. That way you don't have to keep checking the website. You'll get an update when we're ready to do season 2.
So thanks for listening to Church Drunk.
Yeah, Church Drunk at the intersection of faith and fiction. Church Drunk. We'll see you guys in Easter time.
Hey.
Hey.